December 5th, 2012, in Mayapur, India, Nectar Devotion, Class 3. Okay, just to briefly again go over the preface. The preface is, what's in the preface? Authority. Why we should, why the book is authoritative. Two reasons were? Yes?
Giving a taste for us to be able to read later. Giving us a taste so that we're able to read later.
Yes, because in the beginning you always have to establish, give people a motive. And why are the two reasons that it's authoritative?
Written by
Rupa Goswami, who heard from Lord Chaitanya, and?
And references.
And then Prabhupada defines Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Bhakti is devotional service. Rasa is? The taste you get from anything. By the way, I should say in Ayurveda, rasa means also the various tastes, like sweet, salty, sour, bitter, pungent, and astringent. And rasa has to do with liquid. Juice. Yes. Have you noticed that all of our senses involve some liquid? You notice that? Like our eyes have moisture, our ears have some wax, our nose has some moisture, our skin has some moisture, right? Your mouth. And if you took away the moisture, guess what? You wouldn't be able to enjoy anything. When we were children, we did that experiment in school. We dried off our tongue and then like put sugar on it, you can't taste it. So rasa is the essential flavor you get from something. And there's how many rasas?
12.
And everything everyone does is motivated by rasa. But material rasas give you what?
Satiation,
but not satisfaction. And therefore you have to do?
Bhogatyaga.
You have to do Bhogatyaga. Whereas spiritual rasa give you?
Satisfaction,
but not satiation. And also another difference which we touched upon, but I should mention more, is the amrita. Amrita means that it's?
Eternal.
It's eternal. Whereas material is?
Temporary.
And the word that Rupa Goswami used is chapala. Chapala boga. Chapala, you may have heard this song by Govinda Das. Chapala sukha. Chapala means it's very, like it's very, very temporary. You know, you eat your nice meal and then it's over. But some of you cook, you know. So if you, oh my goodness. So you know, you plan your menu, and you go out and you buy the stuff, and you're thinking about it. You make sure your kitchen's clean, and you cook, and you know, and then the whole meal's over. The enjoyment's over in 20 minutes, right? And then you have to clean up. So all material happiness is like that. It's all chapala bhoga, chapala sukha. It doesn't stay. It's very limited, very temporary. All right. So now going to the introduction, which is really the start of Rupa Goswami's book. And here we have auspiciousness.
May I ask a question?
Yes, of course. You can ask me, how am I going to do this when I have to sit on the table and I'm trying to balance three books all over the place and make sure I refer to everything? Yes?
Prabhupada is basing the nectar
devotion
on Srila
Rupa Goswami's
Bhakti Rasamrita. Yes. So does that mean that his introduction, he's introducing his nectar of devotion, or is he basing his introduction on
the introduction is straight the beginning of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita.
So he's just putting it in a way that we will understand?
If you look at If you have the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which you can get now, translated copies, and you take the Nectar Devotion side by side, you'll see that Srila Prabhupada is translating almost every single verse and the commentary of Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur but he's writing it in paragraph form. Plus, he brings in some of his own commentary. It's very similar to what he did with Krishna book. So if you take the 10th canto Bhagavatam, which you have that here, and you have Krishna book here, and if you also have the commentaries of the Acharyas, you'll see pretty much every verse of the 10th canto is in Krishna book, plus the commentaries of the Acharyas, except it's you can't always easily separate where does the verse end. And what Dandara Swami did in Waves of Devotion is for each section, he tells you exactly which verses of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are covered in each chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. But you can find it, you can find a one-to-one correlation. So this introduction starts with Rupa Goswami's verse 111. This is where Rupa Goswami's book is starting. The preface was just Srila Prabhupada's writing, and here we are starting with Rupa Goswami's book. Yes?
So I was wondering, why did Srila Prabhupada choose to translate it this way? Because most of his books, like, he does the actual...
I have no idea.
So you didn't have a particular reason?
I don't have a clue. Why he did some books in one way and other books in another way. So, I mean, these were early books.
Teachings of Lord Chaitanya
is different. In Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada was taking parts. He didn't take the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. He took parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's similar, but it's different. Whereas Krishna book was the whole 10th canto. It seemed to be a style that Prabhupada favored at a certain point when he was producing Nectar Devotion, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna book. Of course, even at that time, he was also producing Srimad Bhagavatam with the Sanskrit in Devanagari and the Roman and word for word in English and purport. But I don't know. I don't know why exactly he chose, because it's practically the same. The difference is that you can't always tease out what exactly is the verse and what exactly is the commentary. It's kind of woven together. And he may not have everything exactly in order. He may kind of put two verses together or take a verse from later and put it over here and put this, you know, it's not exactly like that. I think for the average person, this style is a little more readable. And the other style is a little bit more scholarly.
Yes.
But why Srila Prabhupada favored one, and after that he didn't do books like that anymore. I don't. Okay, so we start out here with Mangala Acharana. Mangala means, of course, auspicious. So any of you who do deity worship, when you, right before you worship your deities, you're supposed to do three things. You're supposed to meditate on yourself as being a pure spirit soul. You're supposed to meditate on the form of the Lord that you're worshiping and their abode. And then you also worship, you also meditate on invoking auspiciousness. I mean, whenever we have some big effort we're doing, we try to make things auspicious. I mean, even modern materialistic people try to make things auspicious in their own ways. They'll have some inaugural ceremony for a building or a boat, or, I mean, maybe they just break a bottle of alcohol on the boat. Maybe that's their Mangala Charana. But they still have some idea that at the beginning of something, you want to invoke auspiciousness. You want to have something that's auspicious. So the invocation of auspiciousness is first Rupa Goswami is telling what is the goal of this book, what is the essence of this book, and it's Krishna as Akila Rasamrita Murti, that Krishna who's the reservoir of all rasas. By the way, you can't say that about Krishna's expansions. Krishna's expansions may not be the reservoir of all varieties of rasas, but the original Krishna, he's the reservoir of all rasas. And particularly, Rupa Goswami is mentioning these gopis, Taraka, Palika, Shaima, Lalita, and Srimati Radharani, who Jiva Goswami has analyzed because of the different relationships that they have, further and closer relationships. So, very clear. Who, Krishna? The Krishna who is the lover and controller of the gopis, especially these chief gopis. And then Srila Prabhupada puts in his own Mangalacharana, because this is also the beginning of his book. So he's also offering to Rupa Goswami and to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. So let me offer, Prabhupada is saying. Then he switches. Rupa Goswami begins his great book by offering his respectful obeisances unto Sanatana Goswami. And he hopes that this book is very pleasing to him. And then he offers this book to all the devotees. Now, Prabhupada says that he's written this nectar devotion specifically for the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement. Now, of course, we go out on the streets and we sell the nectar devotion to people in general. But still, he said he wrote it specially for us. Whereas some other books, perhaps like Easy Journey to Other Planets, were written more as a preaching book. But this book was really written for us. And here all the Vaishnavas are compared to sharks in the ocean. So why? Because the sharks aren't interested in the rivers. They're not interested in material enjoyment and liberation. They're just interested in the ocean. And in Prabhupada's lecture on nectar devotion, he said that if you're just, the Mayavadis just want to like be the water. They just want to be the, they want to be the river. And they want to merge into the ocean. But then the sun evaporates that water again. So you can merge in the Brahma Jyoti, but then again you fall down, and again you merge, and again you fall down. Whereas the fish who swim deep in the ocean, they don't get evaporated. So we're like the sharks in the river that don't get evaporated. And Rupa Goswami says that the materialistic logicians will not bother. They will not be able to bother this work. They won't be able to disturb it. Krishna Das Kaviraj writes something similar for Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he compares the materialistic logicians to volcanoes in the ocean, which is interesting for Sri Chaitanya, who spend a lot of time on a volcano in the ocean called Hawaii. So volcanoes in the ocean, of course, can form islands, but they don't do much disturbance to the people on the land. Earthquakes in the ocean do. They cause tsunamis. They cause tsunamis, but volcanoes don't. Okay, now here's the organization of the nectar devotion. And any good teacher will give you a summary of what they're going to teach before they teach, and they'll also give you a summary when they're finished. And Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada give us a summary. And we can see that Rupa Goswami is very organized. He must have been a very systematic, analytic thinker, Rupa Goswami. So he calls this the ocean of devotion, and then his ocean has four parts. There's an eastern ocean, a southern, a western ocean, and a northern ocean. We're only going to study the eastern ocean. And he goes from an overview of bhakti in general, which is all we're going to be studying. Then the southern ocean are the five parts of rasa. And I remember those by the acronym SWAVAS. But anyway, the sattvika, what we usually call rasa is really the sattvika bhav. What we term the five primary and the seven secondary rasas are really just one part of rasa. They're the sai bhav. Okay, Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my lover, Krishna is my worshipful, great personality. Then anubhav is what you do to exhibit your feeling. The sattvika bhava is what you do involuntarily, like cry or shiver or have your hair stand on end. The vyabhichari bhavas are changing emotions. And the vibhav is what induces you to feel that way. Krishna is so beautiful. And then in vibhav, which we don't cover in this class, you also talk about Krishna and Krishna's devotees, that the vibhav is in two categories, Krishna's and Krishna. Krishna himself and Krishna's devotees. Then Rupa Goswami talks about the five primary rasas, the five primary sthaibhavs, and then the last ocean is the seven secondary rasas, and then he concludes with incompatible rasas and distortions of rasas. So again, we do not study that in the Bhakti Shastri class. I would suggest that you do study that at some point, because it's absolutely wonderful. There's nobody else no other system of philosophy and religion in the world that explains love of God in this depth. All right. So now we're going to look at the definition of pure devotional service. What's this book going to deal with? Oh, one other thing I should just mention is Rupa Goswami twice says that he's not qualified. So why is he writing the book if he's not qualified?
On the order of
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. On the order of Chaitanya. So, as preachers, we can be very bold, although we're unqualified. Isn't that nice? Please, as a preacher, don't ever apologize and get up and say, I shouldn't really be speaking here. Then your audience will think, I guess we shouldn't really be listening to you. So, but as a preacher, we should always be feeling unqualified. And ask Krishna and Guru and the predecessor Acharyas to just use us as an instrument. In the material world, when someone uses you as an instrument, it's horrible. But when Krishna uses you as an instrument, it's incredible. There's nothing sweeter than having Krishna use you as an instrument. We're going to be concentrating today and our first class tomorrow on this, on particularly this main verse of Bhakti Vasamrita Sindhu. And as I said, if you learn nothing else from this class, I hope you learn this. So if the only thing you remember from these 24 hours, 8 days, is this one verse, then I'll be happy. I won't be extremely happy, but I will be satisfied. My objective as a teacher, for those of you who know about teaching, is everybody should know the definition of bhakti. And that's my most basic requirement. All right, I'd like us to... Have any of you studied this verse yet? Anybody? Okay, good. That'll give us a head start. So we're going to recite this together and learn it. First, I'll say, then you repeat, then we'll repeat together. Anya vilasita shunyam.
Anya vilasita shunyam.
Jnana karma dhanavritam.
Jnana karma dhanavritam.
Anukulena krishnanu.
Anukulena krishnanu.
Shivanam bhaktir uttama.
Shivanam bhaktir uttama.
And we say it all together at least 3 times. Anya vilasita shunyam.
Jnana karma dhanavritam.
So bhakti is about Krishna. It has to be for Krishna and only for Krishna, not for anyone else. And here we get to this thing again about if it's for Krishna, what about everybody else? And Prabhupada says Krishna means Krishna's expansions. Everything, ultimately, Prabhupada says, is Krishna. But at the same time, when we're talking about for Krishna, we generally talk about Krishna and his personal expansions. And in another sense, Krishna is everything. So when you're doing something for Krishna, then you're doing something for everything. But still, it's about Krishna. It's not about for anyone else or anything else seen as separate from Krishna. If it's connected with Krishna, if I'm pleasing the customer for the company president, if I'm fixing the desk for the company president, then that's for Krishna. But as soon as I'm doing it separately for Krishna, it's not for Krishna. Because in one sense, Krishna is everything. Hare Krishna is everything. Hare is everything not Krishna. Where is the place that Krishna is not? But still has to be only for Krishna. Yes?
How to connect this with the verse where Krishna says, my devotee is a devotee of my devotee, not my devotee?
We're going to get this as a running theme through our 8 days, I can see. Because if you say, okay, I care about the company president, but I treat my coworkers like dirt, you don't really care about your company president. My son recently got a new job, and he said, this is his first job where the people in the company really follow their organizational chart. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Like in a company, who reports to whom, and who tells whom what to do. By the way, if I do say a word you don't know, you don't always have to look it up in the dictionary. You can also just ask me. I don't mind at all. So generally in the companies he's worked for, anybody can tell anybody what to do. So that was what his experience was. You know, that he had a boss, but this guy would also tell him what to do. And he said in this company, the chief guy has never told him what to do. He thought, never talked to him like that about his work. And he said at first it was a little strange for him. But then he realized they really followed a system. So if I have an immediate authority, I need to please them in order to please Krishna. But my goal is to please Krishna. My goal is not to please my immediate authority. It's subtle, but the difference will be in your consciousness. You will feel the difference. You will feel the difference. An easy example, I don't know how many of you are married. How many of you are married? And the rest of you, either you have been married and you're done with that, you don't want to be married, you hope you'll be married. Well, they say, there's a French expression that everyone either wants to get married or wants to get out of marriage. So just like we're told we should please our husbands, can you always please a husband? Those of you who are married or have been married, no, you can't. It's not possible. If your husband really likes rasgullas, one day you make rasgullas and he'll say thank you. And the next day you make rasgullas and he'll say 2 days in a row. It's just the way it is. You can't, nor can he always please you, by the way. It's not only husbands. You know? The same thing, you know, one day he'll wash the dishes for you and you'll thank him, and the next day he'll wash the dishes for you and you won't even notice. It's just the way it is with another jiva. Just the way it is. But if you're thinking, I'm pleasing my husband to please Krishna, then even if your husband says 2 days in a row, you say, Krishna, I offer this to you. But no, you can't just please Krishna directly, especially with fallen conditioned souls. But even in the spiritual world, we're pleasing the devotees.
Okay, so I was referring to not these conditional relationships. Of course, you can please a jiva with their condition, but the devotee is pure.
Krishna has to be the center. You have to be trying to please Krishna. For the pure devotees, yes. But that's a different than how we see relationships and conditioned mentality. Whatever you do for another jiva, think, Krishna's watching. Is Krishna watching?
Yes.
Is he there? Is he in this room?
Yes.
Is he? Do you believe that? Is he in this room? Is Krishna in this room? Yes. He's in our heart? He's in the picture over there?
He's in my heart.
He's in my heart. Isn't that sweet? He's in your heart? Is he watching? Is he listening? Can you think about, I'm going to do something right now, this minute, that'll make him smile? Simple. Very so simple. And you don't need to be an advanced devotee to do that. Okay? You can do that right now. Now, you don't need to wait till after the class. You don't need to wait till tomorrow. You don't need to wait till next week. You do it right now. That whatever I'm doing for Krishna. And you can't please Krishna if you mistreat his part and parcels. You just can't do it. It doesn't work. Like I'm traveling with my grandson. if you beat up my grandson, I'm not going to be happy with you. It just, and if you're nice to him, I'll be happy. He really wanted to do a certain service here in Mayapur, and I asked the person in charge of that service, can my grandson, he's 14, I said, can my grandson do some service? And I got back an answer, no, we don't want any young children. I wasn't pleased. So it's natural. If you want to please somebody, you have to please the people that are dear to them, but not separately. So everything has to be for Krishna, Krishna, and only Krishna. You can't talk about bhakti for Kali. You can't talk about bhakti for your husband. You can't talk about bhakti for your children. You can't talk about bhakti for your dog. You can't talk about bhakti for a cow. You can't talk about bhakti for anybody or anything except Krishna. But Krishna includes everything. But you can only have bhakti for Krishna. Does that sufficiently confuse all of you? I'm glad. Okay. Next word we're going to look at is bhakti. Bhakti meaning devotional service or love and devotion. Next we're going to look at is uttama. By the way, we're going to do a little exercise tomorrow with each of these words. I'm going over it word by word because I expect you to actually know this. So uttama, tama means?
Fallen.
Fallen, ignorance. And ut means?
Above.
So above ignorance. Here, it also can mean just the best. The top. So it's not just devotion, it's the top devotion. So this verse is about the top devotion. Now, it's interesting, we find this in another very famous verse that you all know, that the thing that's being defined is put at the end. Usually in a dictionary, the thing you're defining is put at the beginning. Can you think of a verse that in a lot of temples they recite every day after the morning program? Yes, which verse? Where it's at the end.
First verse.
First verse. What's the very end of it? Sri Krishna Sankirtan. And when we say the English, what do we say?
All voices of Sri Krishna
Sankirtan. We say the last thing first. So also in this verse, the last thing, Bhaktir Uttama, pure, topmost, above ignorance, uncontaminated, totally pure, devotion. This of which everything here is the definition, is at the end. This is pure devotion, but it's put at the end. Now it's also quite interesting is that the primary definition of bhakti uttama is given at the end, and the secondary is given at the beginning. This is what bhakti is, this is what bhakti is not. This is what bhakti is, this is what pure bhakti, this is what bhakti is not. Of course, Sanskrit's an interesting language, you can kind of fool around with it. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in talking about bhakti, he mentions that it's active. If you've already read the introduction, he said this book is not going to be about silent meditation. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to have... This bhakti uttama is not about just this. That's not why, and we can tell from the word shilana. Shilana means active. Shilana means active. Now, in active, we have not run out of paper. the Sanskrit for positive and negative? Good. Prabhupada and Prabhupada gives an example of negative action. What does he say? In the introduction, he gives an example of negative action. What does he say?
Something that's not favorable for bhakti.
Well, yeah, but he gives an interesting example.
Diseased person has
Taking medicine is negative action. Gives taking medicine as an example of a negative action. Interesting? Okay. And these can be performed with the what? You do action with your what?
Senses,
your body. With what else?
Mind.
And
speech.
Okay, and then mind has? You can say we have a system of thoughts, feelings, and actions. And under actions, you could put willing, body, and speech. So you could also look at thoughts, emotions, the willing function, the actions of the senses, and talking. You could put this also in one category. This is a very integrated system. If you change your behavior, will it affect your thoughts and feelings? If you change your thoughts, will it affect your feelings and your behaviors?
Yes.
If you change your feelings, will it affect your thoughts and your actions? It's very integrated. And the actions of bhakti should be on all of these levels. What will happen if you just try to do bhakti here and not here? It becomes ritualistic. Remember, we talk about bhakti as devotional service. Which part of this is the devotion? Which part of this is the service? That makes sense to you? So the wife is cooking or the servant is cooking? When the servant's cooking, probably there's no devotion. If you stop paying the servant will leave. So that's service without devotion. And you can have devotion without service. Have you ever had any friends like that? Oh, I'm your good friend, you know, and then when you need them, oh. So Shilana means all this. Shilana includes what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. What we're going to do with our body and speech and our power of will. What we're not going to do with our, but what we're also going to do with our thinking, what we're going to do with our feeling, and what we're not going to do. Of all of these, which comes the closest to the soul?
The mind.
What part?
Feeling
and?
Thinking.
Willing. Especially willing.
Your real key is right there. That's the, you're really right there at the root. You know, it's interesting, a lot of us have to-do lists, but there are a number of psychologists who will say it's also good to have a not-to-do list. Jai Doitamaraj wants me to look at his new book and edit it, which will be a pleasure. For those of you who know Jai Doitamaraj. And all the editing he did to all my articles over the years. I said, oh, I finally get to smash Jai Doitamaraj. She said, smash away. So he had sent me an email asking me to do this service for him. And he had asked me when he could get me the material. And I had emailed him back and he hadn't replied. And then I saw him and I said, I've replied. He said, well, I don't check my email in the morning. I said, oh, I sent it yesterday. So that's on his not-to-do list. So he has a not-to-do list. Do not check email in morning. Some people might have not-to-do lists, you know, only turn on computer after finishing 16 rounds or something like that. Right? Do not keep cheesecake in the refrigerator. So a not-to-do list. Do not criticize others, something like that. Okay, is that clear? So you have to do and not to do. So that's Shilanam. And all of that has to be included under Shilanam. You can't just have part of it. Shilanam is the whole, that whole picture. Okay, so right now we have, it's for?
Krishna.
It's what?
Krishna.
It's for what? For what for?
Krishna.
And it's what is it?
Bhakti.
Topmost.
Pure bhakti. And that involves
action.
What kind of action? Positive, negative, with body, mind, and speech. And body involves thinking, feeling, willing. Okay. Well. So I'm doing things for Krishna, pure bhakti, and that makes it pure bhakti. That is pure bhakti. They're for Krishna. I'm doing them for Krishna. I'm doing something for you. I'm doing something for you. I'm doing something for you. So some time ago, and this happens to me actually frequently, but particularly with somebody, but I have people who do things for me that I don't like. Does this happen to you? People do things for you that you don't like. They don't first find out what I like before they do something. For example, I travel a lot. And I like to travel light. I'd like to travel lighter. I'm working on it. But I have this bag, it's about this big, and that's my bag. And people say, would you like a copy of my book? And I say, I'm really sorry, but I can't carry any books. Oh, it's a small book, they say. And I say, I'm really sorry, I can't carry any books. I say, can you give it to me electronically? Or can you mail it to my office in Hawaii? And sometimes they just insist and give it to me anyway. And then I have to do what? I have to give it away. I give away a lot of things. Hang out around me the day before I leave. I remember one person who gave me a winter coat, big, heavy thing, as I was going to the airport, and I thought, I don't have an opportunity to give it away. What am I going to do with this? So the person was doing something for me, but it wasn't really for me. Or I had one time this devotee was serving me. If you want to know why I don't have people serving me. So anyway, I was in a physical condition where I needed someone to serve me at that time. So she was serving me, and I was actually quite sick, and I said, I only want to eat like rice and yogurt and bananas. And she brought me Pecoris. And I said, I can't eat Pecoris. And she said, but I want to see you eating Pecoris. She said, I'll feel bad to see you eating just rice and yogurt and bananas. I said, I'm not eating for you. So that's anukuyena. Anukuyena means it has to be, the mood has to be to make Krishna happy, not to make me happy. Now this is the essence of the whole thing, is anukuyena. That's the essence. That's what love is about, folks. Love is about that I want to make the other person happy. You cannot do this absolutely with another conditioned jiva. It won't work. If you just say, I'm going to dedicate myself and sacrificing myself to make this Krishna Das or Krishna Dasi happy, and I'm going to just, all I'm going to care about is their happiness, after a while you'll go, what about me? It won't work. But this is what pure bhakti is about. I'm only thinking of Krishna's happiness. Where does my happiness come in? Do I just become a robot and a slave and nobody takes care of me? I'm part of Krishna. If I feed the stomach, I'm the little finger. And if I feed the stomach, I get nourished. Real love is my happiness comes in the loving. Now we've all experienced this. How happy I feel just by doing something for someone else, whether they acknowledge it or not. Maybe even I do it secretly, and they don't even know I've done it, and I look from behind, and I just see them open it up and smile. They never know who gave it to them. And I'm just happy in the loving. I'm happy in their happiness. My happiness is their happiness. My happiness is giving them happiness. And I feel happy. Everybody's experiences? Yes? That's what pure bhakti is about for Krishna. That you're loving Krishna just to love Krishna. You're pleasing Krishna just to please Krishna. You're not thinking, what's in it for me? So your activities, the shilanam, the activities, the shilanam that's for Krishna are anukuyena. They're pleasing to Krishna. Now what we're looking at here is the intention. What Krishna's interested in here, interestingly enough, because this is not true with materialistic people, where the way to hell is paved with good intentions. Krishna's interested in the intention. So when Mother Yasoda put down baby Krishna to get the milk, her intention was to serve Krishna, but Krishna got angry. When the demons fight with Krishna, their intention is to kill Krishna, but Krishna enjoys a good fight. So whether or not Krishna is pleased is not the issue. It's whether or not your intention is to please Krishna. Isn't that nuts?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be nice? You know, in conditioned life, my intention doesn't count for anything, does it? Nothing. I can intend to please you, and if you're not pleased, you don't care about my intention. I mean, not you, maybe, but people in general. Right? I'm the only one with this experience, or you also have this experience? People judge me by the result, not by my intention. 95-96% of the time. Every once in a while somebody looks at my intention. Usually nobody even bothers to figure out what my intention is. They don't ask me, they don't think about it, they just look at what I've done. And they imagine what my intention is. Hare Krishna. But Krishna, being in my heart, he knows my intention, and he takes the intention. So if the intention has to be to please Krishna, well, how do you judge that? Therefore, anu. Anu. Anu means following. And here we come back again to the devotees. How do I know that I have the intention to please Krishna? I have to follow the devotees. I have to follow the parampara. I have to have a guru. And here in the introduction, Prabhupada makes a very heavy statement about guru.
Yes. Here Prabhupada says all such activities must be in relationship with Krishna. This relationship is established by connecting oneself with the bona fide spiritual master. The connection with the spiritual master is called initiation. From the date of initiation by the spiritual master, the connection between Krishna and a person cultivating Krishna consciousness is established. Without initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, the actual connection with Krishna consciousness is never performed. Heavy, we will talk about that later. So if that statement really bothers you and you're like going, oh my God, and you have a gazillion questions about it, please put it on hold until we get to chapter 7. Yes?
I was just wondering, in the word for word that we have in the booklet,
yes,
it translates unguyana as favorable. Can you explain the connection of the word favorable with what you're explaining now?
Yes. It can't be favorable unless you're being trained by a devotee. It has to have a favorable intention. The intention has to be to please Krishna, and you can only know how to do that if you're being trained by a devotee.
You were saying that whether or not Krishna is the intention, not, but how can Krishna not be pleased if you're...
You'll have to talk to Mother Yasoda and baby Krishna about that. He got angry. He did. He got angry. Of course, on another level, he was pleased. But he got angry. And he said, my mother left me without finishing feeding me. Well, I'm going to show her. I'm going to break this pot. He was great. Although her intention was to please Krishna. Interesting, when Krishna was arguing with Rukmini, and she was silent and she fainted, and Krishna said, my desire was that you would argue back. He said, I wanted you to argue back. He said, but you have purchased me forever by your silence. So he was pleased with her silence and her fainting. And once she knew that he wanted an argument, she gave him one. Or the coward boys, when they entered into Agasura, Krishna didn't want them to do that. But they thought, let's go into Agasura and let Krishna show his heroic chivalry by saving us. So ultimately he was pleased. But at first he was thinking, I don't want them going in there. What are they going in there for? Yes?
Mataji, I'm still a bit confused about this, in the sense that you, on the one hand, you're telling that our intention should be to please Krishna. And also, you're telling that as long as we are doing our service so that we can please Krishna, it's good enough, whether Krishna is pleased or not. But just to take the example that you said sometime back, suppose the Mataji is offering you pakoras with so much of love, although you don't want it.
Yes, but the difference in that was that I specifically said don't offer me pakoras.
Okay.
So it's like offering.
You know, so she wasn't doing anu.
Okay. Okay.
She wasn't doing anu. She wasn't following.
Okay.
So the intention can't be your imagination. It has to be, therefore Prabhupada said you have to be initiated. You have to have a spiritual master. You can't just say, I'm going to smoke cigarettes and please, and with an intention to please Krishna. You can't make up your own shivana. You can't say, well, I've got a favorable intention. I've got pulyena. I've got a favorable intention. I'm doing shivana. I'm doing activities. That's enough. No, it's got to be anupulyena. It's got to be following the acharyas. It's got to be following the shastra. Because that's where Krishna has said what will please him. Generally, if you're following the Shastra and your intention is to please Krishna, he's going to be pleased. But still, the distinction is made. And Rupa Goswami says, it's like if you say, give this food to the man with the weapons. You don't give the food to the weapons. You give the food to the man. So sometimes the man with the weapons and the man are not separated, and sometimes they're separated. Which Prabhupada talks about in a different context. The Prabhupada talks about that in terms of to Krishna can also mean to Krishna's devotees, to Krishna's paraphernalia, to Krishna's holy dung. The way Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explain the man with the weapons is that generally, if you're following the acharyas and you're doing activities with the intention to please Krishna, Krishna will be pleased. But it may happen that you can separate the man from his weapons. So sometimes
You may have the intention to please Krishna and be following, but Krishna gets angry and breaks the butter pot. And sometimes you have no intention to please Krishna, but he's pleased anyway. So the way you judge is not, does Krishna happen to be pleased, but was your intention to please Krishna? In order for it to be topmost bhakti, as the true Krishna, activities, action, not just nothing, action on all those levels, with the intention of pleasing Krishna in a way that's followed. Okay, that's your main definition of pure bhakti right there. So bhakti has to be two?
Krishna.
What kind of bhakti?
Topmost.
Pure bhakti, topmost. It's composed of?
Action.
With the?
Intention
to please Krishna, which is gotten by?
Following.
Okay, let's say this part together.
Anupuyena Krishna Anushidhanam Bhakti Rudham. Anupuyena Krishna Anushidhanam Bhakti Rudham.
Good. Now we've gone through what bhakti is, and you might say that's enough. But now Rupa Goswami is going to explain what bhakti isn't. What bhakti isn't. Just to make it crystal clear. So, ana abhilasa ita. Abhilasa means desires. Anu is here, ani is without. Doesn't have any, you know. And ita is like ness. Sunya, anybody know what sunya means?
No.
Void, zero. There should be zero desire-ness. No desire-ness. Not no desires, but no desire-ness. Now, as we get into the categories of bhakti, sadhana, vaidhi sadhana, raganuga sadhana, bhava, and prema, the beginning devotee, a beginning person, a starter, a neophyte, a first day person, can be in Uttam Bhakti. Rupa Goswami is going to describe Uttam Bhakti in practice later on in the book. Sadhana Bhakti. I'm sure you've all heard the term Sadhana Bhakti. We generally say in the Hare Krishna movement we're performing sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti can be bhakti or uttama. It can be practice of pure bhakti. Anybody here want to practice impure bhakti? If you're practicing pure bhakti, if you're a beginner practicing pure bhakti, will you have material desires?
No.
No. Someone says no. So if you're a beginner in pure bhakti, practicing pure bhakti, you have no material desires.
If you're a beginner, that means you have.
Exactly. By definition, you must. If you're a beginner, that's what a beginner means. A beginner means you have material desires. So how can you have pure bhakti if you're a beginner in pure bhakti? How can it mean no material desires? Yes?
The intention is there for the people who are first, second, third, and they should be having that intention to please Krishna.
You got it. Give her a hand, please. That was great. You're not going to Krishna with the intention of fulfilling your material desires. You got them. But that's not why you're going. Suppose you have a friend who's very rich. And you say, let's go visit the Jagannath temple and have fun together. And you have no intention to get any money out of them. Now, you may have desires for money. Most people desire money. Would most of you like money? Not most people would like it. Right? You don't meet very many people who say, I really just don't care if I have any money. So you may have a desire for money. They say most people want 10% more than what they have. So you may have a desire for money. And you may be with a rich person. But you might not be with that rich person for the purpose of getting money from them. Is that clear? So I may have material desires. If I'm not at prema bhakti, I have material desires. Beginning, middle, end of story. If we're not experiencing unlimited, ever-expanding, transcendental ecstasy 24 hours a day, we have material desires. I guarantee you. So what does this anyavilasita sunya mean? It means, first of all, I'm not doing bhakti to get my desires fulfilled. That's not my purpose in doing bhakti. I'm doing bhakti to please Krishna. What do I do with my material desires?
Do them.
Yes?
I'm doing Krishna service.
I can engage in Krishna service. Very nice.
Thank you.
What else can I do with them?
Suppress them?
Oh, yes, you can. Does that work?
No, not long.
Not very, very long. We'll discuss this later in a further chapter. Suppressed desires come back and bite you, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they either make you angry and hard-hearted, or they make you fall down and... Yes?
When we exalt ourselves in serving Krishna, the automatically those desires just goes away.
That can happen. You can just sort of... But what are you doing with them while they're automatically going away?
You're just not paying attention or trying to...
You have to be careful you're ignoring and not suppressing them. So I can use them in service. I can kind of say, well, Krishna, I hope these go away while I serve you. Yes?
You can get the right understanding about them, like reading or studying.
Yeah, I can see what they actually are. I can take them to Krishna. This is Bhagavatam. You're supposed to take them to Krishna and put them at Krishna's feet and say, what do you say to Krishna? What do you say to Krishna with you? Take your material desires. Got your bag full of them. And you go to Krishna, and you give them to Krishna, and what do you say?
It's up to you.
Do whatever you want with them, and please purify me so that I can just love you. And with all these things, you know, I want money, I want this beautiful silk sari with that roses that I saw in the shop the other day. You know, or I really want that man over there. And Krishna, you do whatever you want with this. Whatever you want with this. And he may give you some of them. Does he ever give you some of them?
Yes.
I mean, I remember. I remember looking in my closet one time and thinking, I could use one more festival, sorry. I only got three. I could use a fourth one. I'd like it to be beige with an embroidered border, that kind of thick silk. Maybe next time I go to India, I'll get, it'll cost me at least $40. Too much money. I'm not going to spend that much money. Sorry, forget the whole thing. The whole thing took me like 20 seconds, and 3 days later, one of the parents of one of my students drove up to the school to get her daughter, and she says, Urmila, I have something for you. And she gave me, as if I had ordered it, as if I had custom designed it and placed the order with somebody. Exactly. And I was crying. And I said, Krishna, I'm so sorry. So, you know, whatever. He may give, he may not give, but you give that to him. But that's not why you're going. It's not what's driving you. You're not saying, Krishna, please give me money. Krishna, please. That's not what's driving you. Okay, we're going to go over the rest of this tomorrow. Thank you very much. See you at 10 o'clock. Hare Krishna.